Hi, my name's Michael Creamer. I work at Cushman & Wakefield, and welcome to the fifth podcast in the pandemic series that we've been running, where we discuss workplace, but using CNW methodology and data as the starting point for the discussions. I have back in the studio Despina Katsakakis and Dominic Brown from Cushman & Wakefield, who kicked this particular series off. And we're going to get straight to it because we've been looking at a lot of data. So, Despina, can you give us a background to the data that we've been collecting?
Absolutely, Michael. Great to be back here. As you know, our focus in this period was to begin to put in place an evidence-based roadmap to help our clients navigate the current uncertainty on two horizons. The short term, how to prepare a safe return to the office, whilst at the same time support their people working at home. And the long term, using lessons learned from the forced remote working to inform a new normal and reimagine the role of the workplace in the future. So we were in a very good place. As we said in our first podcast, we already had over 2.7 million data points on the key aspects of the workplace that impacted remote worker experiences. And we used those to guide our clients on how to support people immediately remotely. But at the same time, we took our proprietary tool, Experience Per Square Foot, and we pivoted it to create a very simple 5-minute version called Experience Per Square Foot at Home, which we offer to all of our clients and our own employees to begin to really understand the real issues that were driving people's experience in this very unusual new state of existence. We are finally at this point where we are able to look across the vast majority of the data. The survey is still open, but we already have over 36,000 responses from over 60 companies worldwide. And that gives us over 1.5 million data points. And we have been finding that the data is very stable in its findings and very robust. So we're very excited to have some really interesting findings to share with you today. And I'll hand over to Dom to start taking us through what is it really telling us about our current experience.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Despina, and great to be back speaking with you again on this. As Despina was saying, we've got a very large and robust data set. And with that, we get a lot of stability in the data, and it also affords us the luxury that we can disaggregate it in a number of different ways, whether it's by generation, department, country, region, previous work location, all of those kinds of things. So we've been able to dive really deep into the data, really get into it, and still be confident on our sample sizes because the overall sample size was so large. We do keep that stability in the data. And I think that's one of the things that's really come through over the last month to 6 weeks as we continue to recut it. When we get new respondents coming in, we do see that stability really come through, which just gives us a little bit of confidence and heart that our results really are robust. And then I think the other thing that's really interesting is you combine that with our Experience Per Square Foot tool pre-COVID-19, and we can then start to do some compare and contrast and see what's been maintained, see what's changed between the two work environments. And we've got a lot of great stuff that's come out of this. And I think it's easier if we split it into a couple of segments and then we can pick them apart through each segment separately. And first of all, I think let's look at the successes. What's good? What are the real good and plus points that have come out of this data? I think one of the first starting points that we need to talk about is that overall workplace experience has been maintained from the pre-COVID time until the current period. And I think that's a real success, given how quickly companies all over the world moved from an office-based model to a work-from-home model. So I think that's a real success. Then when we start to look at the individual components of what comprises a workplace experience, I think we also see some other successes that come out of it. And the main one that we've seen is around team collaboration. And that has rapidly escalated in the current COVID environment. Indeed, we've gone from a position where around 63% of respondents pre-COVID either agreed or strongly agreed that they were collaborating effectively with team members. That's increased to over 73% in the current environment. And that's very closely linked to the collaborative technology that companies are using. So I think that's a real positive that we see that comes out of it.
And Dom, let me just interject there for a second.
Sure.
That's a really interesting finding, because one of the things that we're told time and time again by everyone is this serendipitous moments in the workplace, in the office building, mean that we're more productive, that we get it, and that's what we're missing. Yet your data is saying something different to that. So I don't know if you've got a view on that, Despina.
Yes, I think it's really a very important data point that Dom has exposed, because effective collaboration is often what holds companies back from introducing flexibility in the workplace. They feel they will miss out that face-to-face serendipity innovation. However, that's not entirely false. What we will find as we delve deeper into the data is that for some work processes, some work groups, that still is a key driver. But overall, it is not something that it holds back the flexibility of where you work.
Okay, back to you, Dom. Sorry to interrupt mid-flow there, but want to pick up on that. So
definitely worthwhile. I think whilst we're still talking about successes, there are two others which come out of this. Talking of productivity, that's one thing that we also see has been maintained. And it's actually very interesting just how stable that is from the pre-COVID environment to the current work from home environment. And indeed, the proportion of respondents saying that they can be productive and focus when they need to actually hasn't changed at all, which is very interesting just how stable that is. And whether that's because there are distractions at work, just like there are distractions at home. Now, those distractions are different, but whether that's something that's underlying this overall stability is an interesting point. Spin, I don't know whether you've got a view on that level of distraction at home versus in the office at all.
Yeah, it seems that actually the distraction that our colleagues cause in the office has been replaced by that caused by our families. So I think that is a particularly interesting one. Again, what we'll find is that it doesn't necessarily play out consistently across generations. So younger generations find it slightly harder to focus because, you know, they might have less space or more distractions from children, whereas older generations are finding it much easier to focus because they might have the space and less distractions. So it's an interesting pivot, but overall, I think the scores are incredibly compelling.
And also just to pick up on that, Dom, and so I'm clear, but productivity at home, given all the distractions you're saying is basically the same. So that would suggest when schools are allowed back and people can work from home without all those interruptions, would you expect their productivity to be even better than if they're in the office?
There's certainly the opportunity for that. Some of it comes down to what type of business unit, what your role is, because we do know we have disaggregated the scores and all of the sub-variable drivers as well by business unit, and different business units do have different experiences. And we pick up on that a bit in the challenges, and we can head in that direction shortly. Right. Because whilst I'm here extolling the virtues, there are clear challenges as well. But I think just to quickly round out the positives, and I know that this one's very close to Despina's heart because we were talking about this in the very first podcast 6 or 8 weeks ago when it was, but trust was one of the issues that we spoke about in quite a bit of detail. And it's very, very interesting that across our 36,000 respondents, 90% stated that they felt trusted to carry out their role by their manager. That's another real, real positive. But it was also a two-way street in that respondents said that they felt trusted, but at the same time, they themselves said that they trusted their company to navigate this crisis and to come out the other side of it as well. So we're really seeing this trust being a two-way street, which is a real positive as well.
And it's a sort of collective responsibility, which is really interesting because it's the management trust people to do their work from home and the people trust the managers to do the best for the business in this very unpredictable economic climate.
I think that issue of trust, as you said, is absolutely critical. And it's a really interesting shift to having managers trust people to work away from the office and out of sight and the other way around. So if those are the three kind of super good things that have come from this, what are some of the difficulties that the data is beginning to show us?
Yeah, sure. And there are some quite clear difficulties that are coming out of this. And one that really stands out or stood out early on when we were doing the analysis was around bonding and that human connection element. And what we've seen in the current environment is that that is one of the variables that comprises the overall workplace experience that we've seen take a hit in the current work from home period. So it's that not being in the office and that face-to-face interaction and the informal joke with a colleague and those kind of things that you get when you're talking to someone in person and face-to-face. We've seen that slightly deteriorate, not massively, but it has slightly deteriorated in the current environment. But it then flows through into other areas of overall workplace experience as well. And one of the main areas that we see it impacting is on cultural connection. And by that, I mean an individual's connection to the culture of the company. When we looked at how correlated variables were, bond and cultural connection were very, very strongly correlated. And again, this was a new question that we asked in Experience Per Square Foot at Home around cultural connection. And it was one of the lowest scoring variables overall. And then also closely correlated with bond and cultural connection is learn. And we're seeing that there's about 10% of the respondents that really feel quite strongly that they're not learning in the current environment. And I think, again, that stems from not having that face-to-face element in that you might have a meeting with someone and then halfway through the meeting, you might go, oh, how did you do that? I've always wanted to know how you did that or how do I change this chart or something like that. And I think because the effective collaboration right now is so effective and so task oriented that perhaps people maybe don't feel comfortable in asking or stopping a Zoom meeting or a Skype meeting or a team meeting to ask a question like that. So there's that little bit of loss of connection that we see there.
So let me just ask a couple of questions and take them in turn. So the bonding and cultural connection I'm really interested by, because I think if bonding's more or less the same, the cultural connection becomes even more important, because if you lose your cultural connection to your company and you're working away from a physical office, that would tend to suggest that you could pretty much work for any company doing the same job and it would have no impact. So is that the right interpretation? I think the companies are going to have to think long and hard about how they maintain that bond with other people and also the bond to the company. Otherwise, they're going to have a tough time with their employees wanting to stay.
Absolutely, Michael. I think this is such an important point. And we had some data a couple of years ago from Gallup that showed that employees that had a friend at the office were 7 times more engaged with their company and their company culture. And that's what this is showing us, this issue of friendship, this informal bond that you build in going into the office is a very, very important element. So one of the things that's interesting in this, the two sides of the data, so we're collaborating more, but we're less connected as human beings. It begins to question what the role of the office is and who are the people that need to go to the office. Why do we all need to go into the office? And we can come back to that in more detail.
Yeah, let's come back to it in a minute, because the other thing which maybe right is learn. And I guess just my personal anecdote is that and probably learning more being at home because everyone's got webinars and podcasts and whatever else going. So there's a lot more opportunity for people to find things to learn, if that makes sense. So I can see that being a positive, but I guess what you're talking about is the personal interaction learning when you're next to someone making a phone call, or you're in the meeting with them, not saying very much, but listening to how they negotiate or whatever it happens to be.
Exactly. You know, if you look at certain businesses, it's why in law firms they have juniors sitting next to senior partners. It's that type of learning. And I think it's a really interesting question, especially as we're seeing that many learning institutions are moving to remote learning. So that's a much bigger societal question as to what does that mean for learning in the future.
So I think maybe just to go into sort of the last section of this, the big question that this all leaves us is how do we think about designing work, and I use the word work rather than a physical place, in the future? I mean, we've had this experiment, as we all call it. We know that things are shifting. Does it mean that we've got to redesign physical office space to do something different?
Yes, I think we absolutely have an incredible opportunity to think about the purpose of the office. And the purpose of the office, clearly from our data and from even anecdotal experience from our clients, isn't anymore about people coming to just sit at rows of desks, but the office needs to become an inspiring destination to strengthen cultural connection, learning, bonding with colleagues and with customers, and to drive innovation and creativity. And this is where, when we look at some particular work functions who are experiencing greater challenges, this is heightened even more. So we've seen, for example, sales teams and R&D teams find this period the most challenging because they rely even more for their work on that face-to-face and innovative collaboration and brainstorming. So the nature of the office needs to change as a destination that supports those types of activities in the future.
So what you're advocating, without trying to simplify it too much, is the office needs to be redesigned to take hold of those, if you like, the negatives or the parts of the survey that are beginning to show where people have problem, because we know that in the large part people are going to work away from a physical office, or at least know they can get their work done. So we really do have to reimagine and deal with those negatives, if I can call them that.
Exactly. And I think what we're seeing in the survey, which is really interesting, is that a very large percentage of our participants, 3/4 of them, are actually expecting that their employer will embrace a flexible working policy moving forward. That doesn't mean that they'll just be working from home, but it means that they will actually have much more choice and flexibility of where to work from. So when they choose to go into the office, they will do so to have those meaningful collaborations, to have the brainstorming meetings, to learn from their colleagues, to be part of that corporate culture. Of course, what's really interesting is that as we begin to think about this flexibility, we then begin to understand that the workplace will no longer be a single destination, but it will actually be a variety of locations that will support our convenience, our experience, our well-being. And that means that we're starting to think about it more as an ecosystem that supports that functionality and well-being. And it offers employees the opportunity to do their best work from anywhere.
And so I guess maybe to wrap up, we can talk a little bit about how the future might unfold, because we're obviously at a point now where people are beginning to think about how to go back to work. They're obviously going back to the workplace that they had pre-pandemic. So it doesn't incorporate any of the things that we've just talked about for obvious reasons. So step one, if you will, is getting people back into a flexible way of working. In other words, not just from home. Over time, as leases expire, as companies open new offices, I guess what you're saying is they need to be thinking about all these things. Is your intent to continue collecting data sets? Because I'm sure as we offer up different ways of working and more variety and flexibility, people's perceptions will change. And maybe I'll leave that with the question, which is, you know, I think we've seen the data shift from the beginning of the pandemic to now in terms of people's perceptions. And do you see that something it'll continue to evolve as people get used to a different way of working?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've experienced a work-life integration that will completely change our expectations of how we work and where we will work. I think it's a great moment in terms of redesigning the office space, but this is not going to be a linear process. And as we begin to look at a transition going back to work, we will definitely be embracing lower densities for more social distancing at the office, whilst at the same time looking at how we accommodate the right types of environments for people to feel engaged at work. So it's actually creating a very interesting set of scenarios that in many ways, as work becomes more flexible, the need for the office doesn't go away. Its characteristics change and the overall spatial requirements don't really change. Their mix changes and their location might change. So you might think about creating workplaces close to clusters of where people live and to be able to reduce commute times. We might see reinventing the main street, leveraging, we've heard from Barclays CEO recently, leveraging bank branches into workplaces for their people locally. So I think we're going to see the reinvention of not just work, but the reinvention of the way we work, live, play, learn, to leverage space, time, and technology in a completely different way. And use space really to support us more effectively.
Despina, that's fantastic. So a big, big thank you both to you and to Dom. I'm really looking forward to seeing the data as it's released. I know there's a number of things that will be coming out. And look forward to, as you say, that optimistic future where we have a more enhanced way in which we work, which is good for us as individuals, as well as for our businesses. So again, pleasure to be talking to you both again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.